Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Preparing for the Next Global Outbreak, a Guide to Planning from the Schoolhouse to the White House, by David C. Pate, M.D., J.D., and Ted Epperly, M.D., narrated by Peter Lerman. Publishers note, this audiobook contains references to visuals present in the print and ebook editions of the book. Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. George Santayana. The COVID-19 pandemic is historic. People will be talking about it decades and decades and decades from now. Anthony S. Fauci, M.D., Director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, National Institutes of Health. Preface. The authors are physician leaders in Idaho. Both have been on the tip of the spear in trying to educate and protect the public during the COVID-19 pandemic. They have worked together for more than a decade to transform healthcare in Idaho by leading their respective organizations and partnering with each other, and most recently, have served as co-chairs of the Healthcare Transformation Council of Idaho, sponsored by the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare. Dr. Pate, a specialist in internal medicine and a healthcare attorney, retired from his prior role as president and CEO of St. Luke's Health System, based in Boise, Idaho, at the end of January 2020. He took a call from the governor of Idaho a couple of weeks later that brought an abrupt end to what he and his wife Lynette anticipated would be a relaxing time together, enjoying retirement. That call was a request for Dr. Pate to serve as a member of the governor's coronavirus working group to advise the governor on the public health issues associated with the threat of COVID-19. From that point on, Dr. Pate has attended weekly working group meetings, advised Idaho's largest school district on its pandemic plans, been active on Twitter, at Dr. Pate's blog, in commenting on COVID-19 and answering his followers' questions, written a blog, drpatesblog.com, participated in numerous press and media interviews, and answered listeners' questions about the coronavirus on a weekly program on a local NPR radio station. Dr. Epperly, a family physician who has committed his career to graduate medical education, developing future primary care physicians for Idaho and the nation, and caring for minority and poor populations of patients in Idaho, is the president and CEO of Full Circle Health, a large federally qualified health center with 10 clinics, 4 family medicine residency programs, 1 pediatric residency program, and 6 fellowships. Idaho's public health system is divided into 7 public health districts, and Dr. Epperly has served as a member of the board for Central District Health, the most populous health district in Idaho. During 2020, Dr. Epperly was an influential and outspoken board member, frequently advocating for the public health measures needed to protect Idahoans, influencing the district's board to take some of the strongest measures of any public health district in Idaho, often after being inundated with emails in opposition to any restrictions. And regrettably, even after protesters showed up at his home in an effort to intimidate and harass him and his wife, Lindy. Dr. Pate's wife, Lynette, had urged him to write a book about the pandemic for months. It was, however, a call from Dr. Epperly to Dr. Pate, suggesting that the two consider co-authoring a book on the subject, that caused Pate to agree without hesitation. Both physicians have spent so much time and effort to combat the pandemic in Idaho that they agreed that, though an end is hopefully in sight given the COVID-19 vaccines, it is imperative that future U.S. presidents and their administrations, the federal government and its health agencies, state governments and its leaders, public health leaders and health care leaders, learn the lessons that this COVID-19 pandemic has to teach us. The authors know that there will be another pandemic. They just do not know when. Whenever it is, they pray that the country does not repeat the mistakes of this pandemic response and that, as a country, we can be better prepared for that future day so that there will be less loss of life, less serious illness, fewer long-term health consequences and health care costs, less economic devastation, less disruption to life, less impact on America's mental health, and fewer disparities in health care, and less politicization, less divisiveness, and more compassion as we come together as one Idaho, one nation, and one global community. Chapter 1, The SARS-CoV-2 Virus and the COVID-19 Pandemic. The worst pandemic in modern history was the Spanish flu of 1918, which killed tens of millions of people. Today, with how interconnected the world is, it would spread faster. Bill Gates. In March of 2020, President Donald J. Trump made several statements, including, "Nobody knew there would be a pandemic or epidemic of this proportion, so there's never been anything like this in history. There's never been." He also said, "And nobody's ever seen anything like this." On another occasion, he remarked, "I just think this is something that you can never really think is going to happen." These remarks, of course, overlooked some facts, that there have been pandemics even more severe than COVID-19, such as the influenza pandemic in 1918 to 1919, the Spanish flu, and that scientists have been monitoring the possibility of coming pandemics and alerting the public for decades. There have been numerous books written that project the chance of a future pandemic, and Bill Gates gave a TED Talk in 2015 in which he warned of a coming global health threat. Hospital leaders have been doing pandemic planning for many years. The Obama administration had developed a pandemic plan and conducted a tabletop exercise with members of the incoming Trump administration before President Trump took office. Both SARS, Severe Acute Respiratory Syndrome, and MERS, Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, were caused by novel, previously unknown, coronaviruses emerging within a decade of each other. So it is not all that shocking and unimaginable that we have a third novel coronavirus in less than a decade from the second one. What is surprising is how few are the lessons we remembered from what we should have learned from these previous outbreaks, and how we still find ourselves unprepared. Recommendation number one, prepare for the next pandemic now. The U.S. government and its agencies must acknowledge the risk of future pandemics and plan for them. Further hampering our efforts to recognize a newly emerging public health threat, and specifically this novel coronavirus, was the Trump administration's decision to make significant funding cuts to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, the National Science Foundation, and the U.S. Agency for International Development staff stationed in China. The experts at these agencies work with foreign countries to assist them in identifying and containing disease outbreaks. Notably, CDC staff have worked with their counterparts in China for the past three decades. Given that many of the emerging global health threats are from zoonotic diseases, infections transmitted by an animal to a human, it was unfortunate that before the SARS-CoV-2 virus outbreak, the Trump administration transferred the U.S. Department of Agriculture manager of the Animal Disease Monitoring Program in China, who oversaw the Animal Disease Monitoring Program, out of China. The embedding of American scientists and epidemiologists in other countries is in the best interest of the United States because we are a connected world driven by global trade and because of the ease of international travel. Such travel allows a localized outbreak of a novel virus to be rapidly spread to people living elsewhere in the world, who will likely all be susceptible to the virus's effects. In 2018 alone, 41.77 million Americans traveled overseas for business or pleasure. In that same year, approximately 80 million international visitors traveled to the United States, an average of almost 220,000 people per day. These figures highlight the vulnerability of the United States to the introduction of new transmissible diseases from other countries, especially when that new disease does not make its host too ill too soon. Two factors that make a disease an even greater threat are, one, when the novel virus can be transmitted by respiratory droplets or aerosols so that direct contact is not necessary, and two, when the infected person can remain asymptomatic for a period of time while contagious. With a high viral load, the amount of virus in the person's nose or throat, and when transmission requires a low viral dose, the amount of virus necessary to infect someone else. Recommendation number 2. Establish a public health presence in foreign countries. Future U.S. presidential administrations should recommit and invest sufficiently in establishing a public health presence in certain foreign countries, developing countries without a sophisticated public health infrastructure, countries with closed societies that will allow our presence, which otherwise would be less forthcoming or less timely with information about an outbreak, countries where zoonotic diseases are a high risk, or that have previously precipitated an epidemic or pandemic, to assist in the early identification of novel viruses and other pathogens and their containment. A note to listeners. While we will refer to novel viruses throughout the book for simplicity and clarity, we do so because we believe that they are the biggest threat when it comes to future pandemics. However, we do not want listeners to get the impression that viruses are the only potential pathogen that could lead to a future pandemic, nor do we suggest that the virus would necessarily have to be novel. Given that we are writing this book during the pandemic, our description of the timeline and developments is incomplete. There is no doubt that we will continue to learn more about this virus and the disease it causes. It is entirely possible that the things we think we know will be proven wrong in the future. Regardless, it is unlikely that the technical aspects of this virus or the disease it causes will materially affect our recommendations. One day soon, we hope, SARS coronavirus 2, SARS-CoV-2, will be behind us. We focus instead on what is ahead of us, likely another pandemic in the not all that distant future. It is for that pandemic that we write this book. We believe that the lessons from the present situation may avert that future pandemic or at least lessen its impact. How the pandemic unfolded, December 2019 through January 2020. On December 31, 2019, China publicly reported that a cluster of cases of pneumonia were noted in Wuhan and suggested a connection to the Huanan Seafood Wholesale Market in Wuhan. On January 1, 2020, China reported that the seafood and animal market was closed and that samples retrieved from the market had tested positive for a novel coronavirus. By the next day, 41 patients had been admitted to a hospital in Wuhan, 32% of them requiring intensive care. Most patients, 73%, were men, and the median age was 49 years. Only 32% had underlying health conditions. 29% developed acute respiratory distress syndrome, and 15% of the patients died. On January 10, 2020, Chinese scientists released the genetic sequence of this novel coronavirus, showing that it was a beta coronavirus and likely in the same family as the virus that had caused SARS, which was named the SARS-associated coronavirus, SARS-CoV. SARS was first reported in February 2003 in Asia. Initially, the new virus in Wuhan was named the 2019 novel coronavirus, 2019 nCoV. But as the relationship to the first SARS virus became clear, the virus was renamed SARS-CoV-2. The disease it causes was called coronavirus disease 2019, COVID-19, or simply COVID. Live animal markets, wet markets, are common in Asian countries and sell live poultry, fish, reptiles, and mammals of all kinds. These animals are often caged in close quarters and less than sanitary conditions. The markets regularly cater to clientele who desire exotic animals as a culinary delicacy. Animals are typically butchered out in the open, with a significant potential to spread disease not only through direct contact, but also by airborne particles. Cleaning throughout the day often involves spraying surfaces with hoses, which can aerosolize viruses from blood, urine, excrement, saliva, and other secretions. It is difficult to imagine a setting more conducive to the spread of disease from one animal species to another, or from an animal to humans. Live poultry markets are believed to have been the source of the H5N1 avian influenza virus that infected people in Hong Kong, and the original SARS-CoV virus was thought to have been transmitted to humans in a wet market in China by civet cats infected by bats. We cannot be certain that civet cats were the actual intermediary host because we cannot rule out the possibility that some civet cats were infected by the same source that infected humans. In the study of the 41 patients admitted to the hospital in Wuhan in December 2019, it was noted that 66% had a potential exposure at the Huanan wet market. The animal source of infection has not yet been identified. It is conjectured by some, but it remains unclear and certainly not proven, that the animals that transmitted this virus to humans were pangolins, sometimes known as scaly anteaters, which were sold at the markets. Pangolins are known hosts for a number of beta coronaviruses. The molecular and phylogenetic analysis of a strain of coronavirus that had infected 3 Malayan pangolins showed that the virus was related to, but distinct from, SARS-CoV-2. While this proves that pangolins are natural and parallel hosts of beta coronaviruses, it fails to prove that pangolins were the intermediate host for and human source of SARS-CoV-2. There are other animals, such as the raccoon dog, which are known to be host to coronaviruses that, to our knowledge, have yet to be tested and have been sold in various wet markets in Wuhan. It is also thought likely, but not proven, that if pangolins were the intermediary host, they were most likely infected by bats. Bats are a common reservoir for coronaviruses, and coronaviruses are commonly grown in culture from bat guano from bat caves in China. A spillover event occurs when a virus found in one species of animal is transmitted to a new species. In this case, the SARS-CoV-2 virus was transmitted from one or more animals in the seafood market to humans. It is likely that there were multiple spillover events, just as there were for the first SARS virus back in 2002, as many of the wet markets in Wuhan and elsewhere use common suppliers that may have been the source of infected animals. But again, just as with the civet cats with SARS-CoV infection, we cannot rule out the alternative explanation that pangolins, should any be found to be infected with SARS-CoV-2, were infected by another source in the wet markets that also infected humans. The possibility certainly exists that there were no intermediate hosts, but rather the disease was directly transmitted to humans by bats. While at this time it is widely believed in the scientific community that the SARS-CoV-2 virus emerged in China, and specifically in Wuhan, and that the Huanan seafood market is likely to have been the source of the first known outbreak of disease, it is not at all clear that the first isolated and sporadic cases did originate in Wuhan, or even necessarily in China. Researchers examined the throat swab of a 4-year-old boy in Milan, Italy, obtained on December 5, 2019, after the boy was suspected to have had measles, but tested negative for the measles virus. His symptoms began on November 21st with cough and inflammation of his nasal passages. 9 days later, he was taken to the emergency room with respiratory symptoms and vomiting. On December 1st, he developed a measles-like rash. The throat swab was tested by PCR, polymerase chain reaction, and genetic sequencing techniques and was confirmed to contain SARS-CoV-2 genetic material. Unfortunately, the quality of the sample did not allow for testing to identify the country of origin of the virus, neither proving nor disproving its relationship to the Wuhan strain of SARS-CoV-2. The SARS-CoV-2 virus has retrospectively been identified in wastewater samples taken on December 18, 2019, in the cities of Milan and Turin in Italy, even though Italy would not recognize its first confirmed case until mid-February 2020. The virus was also detected in samples from patients hospitalized in France at the end of December 2019. There have been studies of blood donations in the United States that tested positive for the SARS-CoV-2 virus in that same month. Although uncertainty remains as to when, where, and how the SARS-CoV-2 virus first infected a human, the assessment of the World Health Organization and the majority opinion of scientists and U.S. intelligence services is that SARS-CoV-2 was transmitted to a human from an animal. Because an animal source has not yet been identified, which is not unusual for epidemics and pandemics, and because a virology laboratory in Wuhan is known to have been conducting coronavirus research, there is speculation as to whether the first humans infected were those working at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, and whether those individuals may then have transmitted the virus outside of the laboratory, the so-called lab leak theory. Unfortunately, a lack of cooperation and transparency from the Chinese government has only heightened this concern. It should be noted that at this time, there is no evidence to support a lab leak. The Wuhan Institute of Virology has denied working with the SARS-CoV-2 virus and asserted that stored samples of blood from the scientists working in the lab do not show serologic conversion prior to the time of the outbreak of COVID-19 in Wuhan. There is currently no publicly available evidence to controvert these assertions. Furthermore, the fact that we have identified two lineages of the SARS-CoV-2 virus circulating in Wuhan in some of the earliest samples we have would seem to strongly favor multiple spillover events from animals to humans over a lab leak. While at this time we cannot be certain when or where the virus originated, the outbreak in Wuhan, China is nevertheless the first such event observed. Our recommendations that follow continue to apply, because the observation of such a specific outbreak probably will be the earliest and only opportunity to detect and react to a future pandemic. Isolated and sporadic cases that often precede an outbreak typically are not identified, as these cases were, for many weeks or even months after the pandemic is underway. Recommendation number 3. Establish infection control measures in wet markets. The United States and the world's leaders must place pressure on China and Asian countries that have wet markets to develop and enforce public health measures to prevent the high-risk activities that create significant threats for zoonotic infections and the transmission of novel viruses. In early January 2020, China, the World Health Organization, and other public health experts indicated that there was no evidence of human-to-human spread, which unfortunately was not only wrong, but also likely caused many of us to underestimate the threat of this disease outside China. In retrospect, one wonders whether the best approach would have been to automatically assume human-to-human transmission, given that while 66% of patients reported a connection to the wet market, 34% did not. Recommendation number 4. Presume contagiousness until proven otherwise. With a novel virus that causes respiratory illness, especially one belonging to a family of viruses known to be infectious, we should presume human-to-human transmission is possible until proven otherwise. Furthermore, there were reported infections in at least one of the patient's families and later other families that certainly should have increased the suspicion of person-to-person transmission. Of course, human-to-human transmission was all but certain when we later learned that 3,387 healthcare workers in China had been infected as of February 24th. A subsequent report by the Chinese Red Cross Foundation, the National Health Commission of the People's Republic of China, and the public media noted that as of April 3rd, 23 of those 3,387 healthcare workers had died from infections that were tied to patient care. In looking at the characteristics of these 23 healthcare workers who died, a predominance of male patients was once again noted. The median age was 55 years, and only slightly more than 20% were known to have underlying health conditions. The median time from the onset of symptoms to hospitalization, for those for whom data was available, was 6 days. The median time from hospitalization to death was 19 days, with a range of 1 to 47 days. Alarmingly, a range of serious conditions was noted in those who went on to die: septic shock, multiple organ dysfunction, cardiac injury, hypercoagulability, a condition of increased blood clot formation, intracardiac thrombus, blood clot inside the heart, and secondary bacterial infections. Unfortunately, the timing of this outbreak in Wuhan was probably the worst possible. The Chinese New Year, or Spring Festival, took place on January 25th in 2020. It is customary for Chinese people to travel to be with family for this holiday, and every year millions do. In fact, one of China's major international airports is in Wuhan. Chinese officials locked down Wuhan on January 23rd, restricting all travel in and out of the city. However, by January 20th, there were already reports of confirmed cases of COVID-19 in three countries: Japan, South Korea, and Thailand, with exposures related to travel to China or to someone who had recently traveled from China. Recommendation number 5, immediate targeted lockdowns. With an estimated 4 million international travelers per day, health officials must act swiftly to lock down travel in and out of any area of the world with an outbreak of a novel virus. We must seek agreement from the world's leaders to cooperate in instituting travel restrictions as soon as an outbreak of a novel virus is detected. China's National Health Commission did not announce confirmed person-to-person transmission until January 21st. By this time, many people had likely already traveled, were in the process of traveling, or were planning travel very shortly, and would not have wanted to cancel their trip in light of this important holiday. The CDC did not confirm human-to-human transmission of SARS-CoV-2 until January 30, 2020, when a man living in Chicago tested positive after his wife returned from Wuhan and she became symptomatic with COVID-19. The first case of confirmed COVID-19 in the United States was on January 20, 2020. A 35-year-old man was evaluated at an urgent care center in Washington State on January 19th with a 4-day history of cough and fever. He reported having returned home to Washington on January 15th from a trip to Wuhan to visit his family. Although there were abnormal breath sounds when the urgent care provider listened to the patient's lungs, the oxygen saturation, level of oxygen in the blood, and a chest X-ray were normal. A rapid flu test was negative. In consultation with the CDC, it was decided that despite the man denying that he visited the Huanan Seafood Market or came into contact with anyone known to be ill in China, he would be tested for SARS-CoV-2. There was only one test for SARS-CoV-2 available in the United States at the time, and it required the samples to be sent to the CDC in Atlanta for testing. The test was reported to be positive on January 20th, again providing significant evidence for human-to-human transmission. As a precaution, the man was admitted to an isolation unit in a hospital following the test results. He reported cough, nausea, and vomiting, but no chest pain or shortness of breath. The patient had intermittent fever.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?